This is Anne Sidnall, audio editor for Word on the Hills. Today we have a repeat broadcast of an interview with author Linda Hutzel Manning. This program was originally broadcast on November 5th, 2023. We hope you enjoy this encore presentation of Word on the Hills.
Welcome once again to Word on the Hills, with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host, Felicity Sidnall-Reed, our sound editor, John Unruh, and our guest today, novelist, memoirist, playwright, and children's author, Linda Hutzel Manning. Each week at this time, we visit with a local or regional author or other persons involved with writers and readers and the world of words. We ask our guests to introduce us to their work and to read for us. We like to get a glimpse into their lives and find out what inspires them, what prompts them to write, and indeed to keep on writing. We're very happy to have Linda Hutzel Manning pay us another visit today. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you.
Linda Hutzel Manning's publications include 4 picture books, 3 juvenile plays, 2 middle grade novels, and polka dot door scripts, as well as a literary novel, That Summer in Franklin, a 2-act comedy, A Certain Singing Teacher, which was premiered by Voss Theatre, a memoir about her experiences as a teacher of 8 grades at SS No. 2 Hamilton Township, a 1-room, 1-stove, cold water tap, elementary school west of Coburg from 1963 to 1965. She has also written many pieces of short fiction and poetry published in literary magazines. Born in Winnipeg, Manitoba, she now lives near Coburg, Ontario, where she writes in a century farmhouse. Her children's story, Finding Mufette, has just been released by Pandemonium Publishers. Well, that's quite a bio there, Linda, and every genre taken care of.
I know. I probably should have stuck to one, right? But I didn't.
Well, let's focus a little bit on the most recent one, Finding Mufette. So when did you first write Finding Mufette?
Well, this is the interesting thing. I wrote it when my daughter was in university in the 1990s. And I had an agent at that point because I had those 2 picture books, Animal Hours and Dinosaur Days. And I was very excited after I wrote it. And I thought, I will give it to this agent and she'll love it because she was a cat person. She read it and she said very bluntly, I don't like it. It's too sentimental. I don't want to represent it, which kind of crushed me at the time. So then I tried sending it out to smaller publishers and a few agents, and they all said the same thing. They said, we don't consider Christmas books. They have too short a shelf life. Also, I originally called it the Christmas Stocking Cat. And then at a certain point in Canadian children's literature and in Canadian schools, Christmas became a word that you weren't supposed to use. So when I went to revise it, I thought, I'm not going to call it the Christmas Stocking Cat. I'm going to find another title. And for no reason that I can think of, I wondered what the word for skunk was in French. And the reason I thought about this was because the real cat was totally black with a reverse skunk stripe that started under his chin and went all the way to the end of his tail. Anyway, so I looked up the word for skunk in French, and it's Mufette. And the sound of it appealed to me, so I changed the title to Finding Mufette.
Well, I like that title too. It's, I don't know, it has a charm about it. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely. So why the 3-decade gap between writing it and the publication?
Well, after I don't know how many publishers I contacted, probably a dozen. And when they all said no, I said, okay, forget it. And I put it away and just ignored it until basically late during COVID, I started pulling old manuscripts out and thinking about doing something with them. So that's when I sort of reinvented it.
Well, sort of to double back a little bit, what inspired the story in the first place?
Well, my daughter's Tat was lost in a snowstorm and found, and I decided that I would make it a more magical finding. So that's why it's the way it is in the book, which you find out when you read it.
That's a long time to be rejected and then to still hold on to that story and do something with it. What advice would you give to writers who are trying to deal with rejections?
It is very harsh, especially when you first start writing. I got terribly upset when I was younger about rejections, and it means so little, really. And my advice is don't ever give up on a manuscript. Even if you put it away, well, maybe not for 30 years, but if you put it away for 2 or 3 years and things change, you know, what publishers want change. And the thing is, for instance, if I sent this story to a publisher who hated cats personally, forget it. They're not going to consider it. And it's unfortunately often becomes that personal. I know with Jason and the Wonderful, with Jason, I had sent it out at least a dozen times. And at that point, all the children's books had girl protagonists, the children's books. And then I remember I read an article from a father somewhere saying, you know, why aren't there more books with boy protagonists? My son doesn't want to read all these books with girl protagonists. So I had already written Jason, and it had already been rejected quite a few times. And I sent it to Kato Books, and that's how it got published. And so trends change. What publishers want changes. It has a lot to do with what the market is doing. And of course, now everything is radically different now with, you know, so much media and internet, but it's still the same story. And I just really advise people never to give up on a manuscript, because you just don't know. Even 5 years from now, everything could be totally different what publishers want. So that's my advice.
So, Linda, perhaps you'd read to us a little from Mufet and tell us about your illustrator.
Okay, she's her name is Hannah Suon, Suyon. But she has a website, which is her name, and she has an honors bachelor's degree in illustration. And I know my publisher hunted for a long time to find the illustrator that she felt she wanted. But anyway, she certainly did a wonderful job of my Mufet. Okay, now I shall read. Finding Mufet, which I dedicated to my daughter, Laura. A handsome black and white cat stares out big glass doors. The cat flicks his feathered tail and mews to go out. It's Christmas Eve, Mufet. Caitlin's mum says, pulling 3 red stockings from a plastic bag. Mufet mews again and sniffs at the red stockings. He bats one and sticks his head inside. Silly cat, Caitlin says, snatching him up. Your stocking is still empty. Mufet wriggles to the floor and runs to the door again. Meow, he says plaintively. Meow. No, Mufet, Caitlin says, you would get lost in the snow. Meow, he mews more loudly. Meow. Caitlin pulls the curtains across the patio doors. No, 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 Mufet, she says, pulling a cat treat from her pocket. Mufet turns his back and crouches down, closing his eyes into 2 narrow slits. I wonder what Santa will bring you. Caitlin picks up a stocking and runs it along his back. Caitlin's mom pulls back the curtain. Look, Caitlin, it's a perfect Christmas Eve. The gate is open, Caitlin says, still holding Mufet's stocking. I'll close it. Caitlin's mom pulls on her parka and flips up the glass door bolt. Where is Mufet? She asks. Mufet backs further into his dark corner under the tree. Mufet! He's not here, Caitlin says. Maybe he went upstairs. The instant Caitlin's mom pulls open the door, Mufet races out. Mufet, Caitlin's mom calls, turning on the back light. Mufet, Caitlin drops the Christmas stocking and runs out into a knee-high drift. Get back here. Mufet pauses. He flicks his handsome plume of a tail and disappears through the open gate. Mufat, Caitlin's mom shouts into the wind as they hunt for him, but Mufat is gone. Back inside, we'll wait for him. I'll wait for him on the couch, Caitlin's mom says, giving Caitlin a hug. He'll scritch scratch and I'll hear him, Caitlin whispers, tears tumbling down her face. He does have a name tag, Caitlin's mom reminds her. Maybe someone will find him. Outside, Mufat dances through the drifts, banging snowflakes here, catching snowflakes there. His silky black coat glistens against the snow's whiteness. He dives under a wheelbarrow and through a broken wire gate, scrunches down to slink along a wet, woody hedge. His white belly hairs brush the ground. His whiskers twitch against the wind. He crisscrosses to the closest house now, looking for his glass door. A great shaggy dog lunges at him and he bolts back to the street. Where is his house? He sits down to lick his wet fur, then trots along street after street, from one house to another. All have big glass doors, but never the right ones, and no one lets him in. Close to the park, lights appear through heavy snow. A car skids around the corner. Mufat jumps out of the way into a huge drift. He struggles up, legs wobbling, and stumbles to the bank of a dark, gurgling creek. Still thirsty, he sinks down near the water's edge, curling his white-tipped paws beneath him. Somewhere in the distance, faint bells echo along the street. I'll stop here, because what happens is quite magical, and you'll have to read the book to find out.
Well, thank you, Linda, and we'll now take a short break.